Good evening and welcome to the teleconference. It's completely delightful to be with you all again for our third class and our third phone call on the amazing subject of Kundalini, the living flame of the evolutionary power that transforms our lives inwardly and outwardly. And welcome to all of you who are listening in on the MP3. Like so many of you, I've been radically inspired by the letters and conversations going on the listserv. I'm just constantly humbled and amazed by how much deep experience there is that's flowing through all of you and also through so many people whom I know are having similar or equal experiences of Shakti and who are not actually sharing on the listserv. So I want you to know that there are actually many people on these calls, on these classes, who write to me later and say, I didn't particularly feel like sharing, but I just want you to know that I really appreciated everybody else's shares and experiences. So it's really very beautiful that we've created this sangam, this satsang. So tonight we're going to speak about chakras and meditate in the chakras. We'll be doing a lot of meditation in this class. I'm also going to be leading you through the essential tantric download about the chakras, which is very beautiful and fascinating. And we'll also speak about some of the practices that are helpful in working with Kundalini, in practicing with Kundalini. So we'll begin immediately tonight with our initial chant, the prayer for our practice being of benefit to all beings, and a very brief meditation. And then we'll plunge into our conversation about the chakras. We'll be meditating over and over and again in this mode. So you can find yourself a comfortable and upright posture. You can feel the hips and sitting bones grounding, sinking into the floor. Feel the torso rising upward from that grounded base up through the crown of the head. As with the next inhalation, your chest lifts and opens. And then with the exhalation, you feel the shoulder blades releasing onto the back. We're going to be chanting, as we do in every class, our invocation to the Satchit Ananda, the awareness, beingness, and blissfulness of our inner self, our true self. And we'll be chanting along with Krishna Das. So you can close your eyes or chant along.
Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Sachidananda Murtaya Nishprapancha Shantaya Niralambaya Deyate Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Chitananda Murtaya Nishprapanchaya Shantaya Niralambaya Deyase Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Chitananda Murtaya Nishprapanchaya Shantaya Niralambaya Deyase.
We ask that our practice, through its power, allow all beings to have happiness and the causes of happiness. Through our practice, we ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May all beings be free of grasping, hatred, and dullness. And may we know the equality of all that lives. And I'm going to sing, and those of you who have the words can sing along, the first verse of the hymn to Kundalini, which addresses the Shakti in the Muladhara, saying, you are always looking to rescue spiritual seekers from the cycle of birth and death. You are the ever-young yet ancient origin of all scriptures as well as of the seed mantras. One ought to contemplate you always in the mind. You offer true teachings to earth through the words of spiritual revelation. And O Creatrix, you yourself are the beloved consort of the primordial God, bearer of beauty and auspiciousness. Please protect me, a bound soul. Allow me to be your beloved servant, so that I may one day be united with you. Janmodhara nirikshani hataruni vedadi bijadima nityam chetasi bhavyate bhubhikata sadvakya sancharini mambhat. Okay, my voice is being impacted by dust particles and is not happy singing. So I'm going to say the words. Mam patu priyadasa bhavaka padam sa gataye shridhara datri tvam swayam adi deva vanita dinati dinam pashum. So you can allow yourself to focus on the breath, and focus now on Kula Kundalini, Kundalini in the Muladhara Chakra. Feel yourself seated on that firm base the red petals of the Muladhara Chakra bisecting the area of the perineum. Within the five petals, a yellow square. Within the yellow square, a red circle with a triangle, its point facing down. Inside the triangle, feel the presence of Kundalini Shakti coiled 3.5 times the color of a streak of lightning. With her coils, she wraps around the Swayambhu Lingam, the self-born phallic form of Shiva. And whether you visualize her there or not, you allow the breath to flow in and flow out with awareness of the presence of this lightning-like energy in the Muladhara at the base of the spine. The breath flows in. The breath flows out. And with your next inhalation, you feel Kundalini Shakti rising up into the Sushumna Nadi, the central channel, just in front of the spinal column. She rises up to the center of the pelvic area by the lumbar spine. You inhale and exhale and feel her rising with the next inhalation up to the solar plexus area opposite the navel. Inhale and exhale. With the next inhalation, feel her rising to the Anahata Chakra in the back of the heart, opposite the sternum. And here, have the sense that as you inhale and exhale, Kundalini Shakti is rising and subsiding with the breath, spreading through this area, filling your heart, expanding with the inhalation, expanding a little more with the exhalation. Just let the breath bring your awareness into the heart chakra, feeling the breath and the Shakti expanding through your inner chest. You can allow your eyes to open, feel yourself fully connected through the heart. And we're going to go in and out of meditation several times today. And in fact, much of this talk is going to be a kind of a meditation story as we explore the tantric view, the tantric teachings on Kundalini and the chakras. As we've said earlier, as we've said often, one of the crucial factors in having what I guess we could call a successful Kundalini awakening is having understanding and support. It's one of the reasons that this satsang is so important. And I want to talk just a little bit about this before we go into the chakra conversation. You actually need to have people in your life whom you can talk to about this because not everybody can understand it. And when an awakening is dramatic, it's often hard for other people in your life to relate to it. Someone asked a question on the listserv that I left for this class because I wanted to address it with all of you. She asked why her teachers didn't talk so much about Kundalini, even though students were having awakenings in the classes, and she herself was having quite a strong awakening. I've also noticed that there is not very much talk about Kundalini awakening in the yoga world, and I believe that there are several reasons for this. One reason is that many teachers themselves have had little reliable teaching about the experiential aspects of Kundalini awakening, and so they don't quite know how to judge which experiences are, so to speak, true, and which experiences are, kind of hallucinatory. What kinds of emotional upheavals are the result of purification? That is a deeper purification than happens in a normal yoga class. So people don't talk so much about it. And there are also some situations in which a teacher who doesn't have a lot of experience or knowledge about Kundalini can feel uncomfortable with students who've had awakenings. And there are certain traditions in which Kundalini is really not spoken about or even particularly recognized, or where people regard it as a purely physical energy. There is a very beautiful book by a Buddhist teacher named Jiyu Kennet Roshi, who is the abbot of a monastery in California. And she had a very strong meditative awakening, very visionary, with no guidance at all. And she basically had to figure it out all by herself, which was also the case with my guru, who, even though he was, even though he had a guru and was very much inside a tradition that understood Kundalini, nonetheless, in those days, the knowledge of what happens when Kundalini awakens was so esoteric and secret that he actually didn't understand what was happening to him until he found a book that explained the experiences. And this is the main reason I decided to give this class, so that all of you can have a greater feeling of ease and familiarity with the transformative energy that's actually one of the great gifts that the universe can offer you, and also share with you some of the resources that I've discovered. Over the years, as I've had my own Kundalini experiences and also seen the process in a lot of other people, it's become very clear that the way we experience Kundalini awakening is not only very different for everybody, but is also very related to their temperament, their physical strength, their particular psychological makeup, and their tradition. I have a friend here who's a former Ironman triathlon champion. She's very physically strong and adventurous and has a powerful personal will. And her journey has been very much about learning to surrender her personal will to higher will. Yet she's never been drawn to a teacher. She's never had a teacher. And she had her awakening through the energy of my lineage, but without ever meeting one of the gurus of the lineage. And she began to have very strong physical symptoms, burning in her feet, pain in her eyes, sometimes pains all over her body that had no physical cause. And at the same time, she was having very, very expansive experiences of oneness. She'd be swimming and she'd become one with the pool, or she'd look at the eyes of a deer, or she'd be one with the deer. And these extremely expansive experiences would be accompanied with great bliss and insight. And then a couple of days later, she'd be sort of seized with physical issues. I would say that these dramatic experiences of awakening were, to some great extent, the result of the fact that she's very toned physically. So her body is able to channel huge amounts of energy. And people whose vehicles are more delicate often have much subtler awakenings. But one of the things that that happened to her as she began having this, it's been going on for several years. She's sort of walks around like a normal person, but she's continuing to have very dramatic experiences. And many of her friends, some of whom are teachers themselves and all of whom are practitioners, have have turned out to have a very limited understanding and haven't really, often can't accept the fact that what's going on with her is a very recognizable classical Kundalini awakening and unfoldment. And again, this is why it's so important that people, that you have some people to talk to who get it. Jung writes about an early patient of his, a client who was having palpable experiences of energy rising in her body, and she would have feelings of great bliss and spiritual insight, hugely symbolic dreams like the ones some of you are having, and sudden physical symptoms that would appear. No doctor would be able to find out what was wrong with her, and then the symptom would just suddenly disappear. And Jung, who apparently tried to work with people sort of where they were at, had no understanding of Kundalini. He had no idea what was happening to her, and he kept trying to kind of calm her down and deal with what he was afraid was a pathology. And then several months later, he was given a copy of The Serpent Power, the first book published in English to unfold the classical tantric lore on Kundalini and the chakras. And he realized what was happening to her, being a very naturally curious and open-minded person. He later wrote that his whole treatment had been of this woman had been a series of blunders and missteps. And he wrote, these are his words, a therapist should have a natural reserve that keeps him from riding roughshod over the mysteries that we don't understand and trampling them flat. Which, of course, is what sometimes happens when a therapist or a health worker tries to help somebody who's having dramatic Kundalini experiences. And what they'll often do, it's this kind of fashionable in the world today, is try to help them, quote, ground Kundalini. When the movements of the Shakti feel too uncomfortable, as we've been saying here, it's possible to cool the energy down by using fragrances, by chanting, by really nourishing Kundalini with light proteins and some sweets. But what's often prescribed is that people are told to eat heavy foods like red meat or to drink red wine, which seems to be a very good at kind of cooling down energy in the head, but actually by numbing, kind of numbing you out, or by externalizing the energy by conversation or by working hard. And of course, one of the signs of awakened Kundalini is that we might have an abundance of physical energy and want to be very active, and this is a good thing. But on the other hand, we shouldn't be trying to wear ourselves out. And even though it's very appropriate to cool the Shakti down in the ways that I've mentioned in some of the emails, at times when it feels uncomfortable or when psychological wounds are being triggered and it feels just really uncomfortable, what's more important is to address the issues that are creating the blocks that Kundalini is trying to open. And this is one reason why diet and practice and giving Kundalini a chance to work by sitting in meditation or chanting. Sometimes self-massage can be very helpful and very important. And of course, there are types of body work that can be conducive to helping Kundalini move through blocks. But the practitioners have to be skilled at it. And it is very important to have a bodywork practitioner who's sensitive to the flow of energy in your body, because we partner with Shakti not by trying to control the flow of energy, but by giving Kundalini the nourishment she needs through diet, through meditation, through prayer, through dialoguing with her, communicating with her, as we've been saying, through working with your own mind, spending time with spiritual people or spiritual teachings, and chanting. And I, again, as we move into the chakras, I want to just read to you some more of the classical psychological and spiritual symptoms of Kundalini awakening. One of them is a deep yearning for inner growth that for some of you is really the first sign that awakening is happening. Another is the feeling that you don't fit in, which I hear from many, many people that I've experienced myself at stages of this journey, feeling separated or empty, and also feeling inwardly connected, in tune, and fulfilled. It's the opposite feeling, but they're actually both the signs of particular stages of purification. Feeling more sensitive than usual, that is, being needing to spend time alone or feeling that loud noises are disturbing. And also just being more energetically sensitive in the sense of tuning in to other people's states. Feeling, having special capacities arise, heightened creativity or competence in some new area, as we were saying last week. Having mystical experiences. Having inner experiences that feel confusing until you find out that they're related to Kundalini. Having strange physical difficulties arise that you really can't find a reason for because they're not medically based. And having these difficulties disappear without your doing anything about them. A feeling of existential restlessness is a great sign of Kundalini rising, Kundalini awakening. Developing intuition, insight, empathy. Being able to more and more sense the movements of energy in your body. Having the practices that you've been doing bear fruit more quickly. Having just naturally feeling high in nature or with another person or with a lover. Having a heightened interest in helping others. Tending to focus inward and tending to question the values of your group or tribe. Having a sense that something transformative or holy is happening. We very often understand this intuitively. Wanting to meditate, to pray, to read about holy people or to read spiritual books. Glimpses of bliss, oneness, insight into the meanings of spiritual teachings. And shifting food sensitivities, changes in sleep patterns, you don't sleep or you sleep a lot, changes in your sexual activity, disinterest in parties, feeling compelled to make a change in your life. And of course, for many people, subtle visions, dreams, prophetic dreams, dreams that you know are meaningful or significant or purificatory, inner sounds, sometimes hearing voices or messages that seem to come from the subtle world. And as Kundalini purifies you and becomes more stable in your body, you get the capacity to function in the world, yet you have at the same time a powerful inner-directed focus and often an ability to sense the needs of others. So there is a natural mastery that starts to arise, and I know that this is true of several of you that I know here in this group, that arises as a result not only of your practice, but of the interaction of the Shakti. And I want to say another thing about the gifts of the inner world. The texts of Kundalini make a distinction between experiences that can happen without Kundalini awakening and experiences that normally occur only when Kundalini has been aroused. And this is something that a lot of people have asked questions about, so I want to say a little bit about it. There are certain inner gifts that can be triggered by shamanic or ritual practices or by devotion, but specifically the shamanic practices, the rituals, can be deliberately calibrated to stimulate subtle centers in the crown chakra, which are related to aspects of the brain. In Sanskrit, these centers are known as dalas, D-A-L-A-S. And these centers in the crown chakra are the seat of many, many different kinds of siddhis. Siddhi means accomplishment or capacity, supernormal capacities. And in shamanic trainings or through ritual use of psychoactive drugs, you can open these centers sometimes temporarily, sometimes in a, you know, in shamanic training you practice to be able to open them at will. In traditional Kundalini practice and in spiritual practice in general, it's understood that these powers, these siddhis, will arise naturally without your having to cultivate them. And that the understanding is that it's to deliberately try to cultivate these powers can be helpful to other people, you know, which is what shamanic practitioners do in tribal traditions. They use these practices for helping the tribe or for helping people remove obstacles. But when you're on an inner path, the use of siddhis, even with a helpful motivation, will eventually impede your spiritual progress. And a lot of people who have psychic capacities will find this at one point, that they realize that they actually need to back off of doing certain often helpful uses of psychoactive powers, precisely because it's bringing their practice to a stop. And so this is because when we're actually using siddhis in an outgoing way, the centers, the chakras, will tend to work in an externalized fashion. And this keeps this subtler development from occurring, which is why so many teachers warn against getting caught up in siddhis. And the thing is that there are many kinds of siddhis, and we don't always know that what's happening is a siddhi. For example, one of the most common siddhis that occurs is the awakening of a capacity to influence other people. Many spiritual teachers and yoga teachers have this siddhi activated, and what sometimes happens if you don't understand what it is that the ego will naturally get involved in it, especially when you're helping other people. So you can start to feel that your insight, your capacity for helping others, your skill at teaching or explaining things, or even the capacity for actually transmitting energy to people, which can happen very naturally when with someone whose Kundalini is awake. It can start to feel like something that you own. The ego can subtly take charge of it, and you know, especially when we have just the desire to be good people and being helpful to others or being knowledgeable makes us feel more worthy. And what I've seen is that a lot of the problems of contemporary teachers overreaching actually arises from an unconscious use of the siddhi of attracting or charming others. So it's important to actually, when these capacities are born in you, of course they're enjoyable, but always to remember to offer them, and you know, literally to offer them to the universe, to offer them to the cosmic guru, or to your teacher, your guru, if you have a guru, and really recognizing that all of these gifts are gifts of Kundalini, and that your goal ultimately is to unfold and expand Kundalini. So be present with the breath. Just allow the breath to arise and subside, being aware of the breath touching your nostrils as it flows in, cool on the inhalation, and flows out warm on the exhalation. Be aware of the movements that the breath makes in the body, perhaps the chest or the torso or the lower belly is rising and falling with the breath. Being aware of the flow of the breath in the nostrils and the movement of the body with the breath. see if you can subtly tune into the pulse, the pulsation, which is the flow of blood and heartbeat in the body, which takes place at a subtler level of awareness, but is going on simultaneously with the sense of the breath flowing in and out of the nostrils and the movements of the breath in your body. And become aware of the muscles that are holding your body in balance at this moment. So you have this four-leveled awareness of the breath in the nostrils, the movement of the breath in your body, of the pulsation, the pulse in your body, and of the experience of the muscular balance that you maintain in your position. And with this sense of all body awareness, all body self-recognition, we're going to talk a little bit more about the chakras. Some of what I'm going to say you're probably familiar with, because the subject of chakras is very much a part of yoga trainings these days. Some of it you may not be familiar with. Different traditions talk about the chakras differently, and they describe them as having different colors and as having different forms that you can see inside the chakras. That, you know, they actually give, there's a variance in the psychological qualities that different traditions associate with the chakras. So I want to say, where I'm coming from, the viewpoint that I'm offering is from the Tantra, from the Hindu Tantra. It correlates in many respects with the Tibetan Buddhist Tantric texts on the chakras. It's also based on my experience and on the teachings I received from my gurus. And we're going to talk a little bit about the chakras in general, and then move up through the chakras and meditate a little bit on each one. So the chakras, as you may know, are the main links between all the activities of the three bodies, the causal, subtle, and gross bodies, and also of the five koshas, the sheaths that the yogic system uses to describe the different layers of the body. So the physical sheath, which is the flesh and bones, the pranic sheath, which is the energy body, the mental sheath, that's the part of our being where we think and visualize, and the what's called the intellectual sheath, or the vijnanamaya kosha, where we have experiences of subtle awareness. These three sheaths are all in the subtle body. And finally, what's called the Anandamaya Kosha, the bliss body, which is actually the causal body. And these five sheaths are said to surround the inner self, the deep state of the inner self. And Kundalini actually purifies and has to purify all these bodies in order to allow the self to blaze. And all of these bodies have manifestations in the chakras. There are, in the system that I follow, said to be 43 chakras in the body. Some of them don't even have names, at least not that I can find in the texts I read. But of course there are seven main ones, with some subsidiary chakras in the heart and the head center. They are often described as spinning wheels or vortexes of energy. And each chakra, of course, is related to a different set of organs in the body. And it connects to the subtle energies. It connects subtle energies to the physical world, which is why very often when we have a physical issue, a disease in one of the organ systems, it's possible to treat it through the chakra, through the subtle system that's connected to it. A lot of practitioners nowadays work with chakra balancing. I went on the internet today, and I saw there must have been 150 entrances for chakra balancing. It's hard to say which ones are skillful, but some of it certainly is. And there are texts out that associate psychological issues with the chakras. A lot of that work is based on Jung's work. But this is very important, and I really want you to understand this, that balancing a chakra or balance among chakras, which is a very good thing to achieve in your life, to keep yourself tuned to in your life, it's not the same thing as awakening the chakra. So I'll say this again, balance in a chakra or balance among chakras is not the same thing as awakening the chakras. It's possible to balance chakra energies through breathing, through sound, through visualization, but not have awakened chakras, because the chakras are awakened by Kundalini. That's part of the gift and the work of Kundalini. And another really interesting thing that you discover as you practice and read the literature and put your experience together with what the esoteric texts say, is that each chakra is related to a corresponding center in the crown chakra, which, as you'll remember, is called the thousand-petaled lotus, the Sahasrara. And it's, you see in statues or pictures of the Buddha that he wears this kind of cap of that looks like a chrysanthemum, which is a representation of the thousand petals of light that many, many yogis and maybe some of you have seen in the crown of the head. It's actually a little bit above the crown of the head, as we'll see later. But among the petals of the Sahasrara, there are several petals related to each one of the chakras. And when Kundalini rises to the head, and in some people's awakening, this happens quite dramatically. And for many people, you may have a meditation experience that really awakens the head center. When Kundalini rises to the head, she will activate and awaken the chakras from these petals in the head. And these relate to brain states. And they also cause many of the very, very powerful experiences of all pervasiveness, of extreme ecstatic bliss. And it's not uncommon for somebody who's having that kind of awakening in the Sahasrara to simultaneously activate purification in the chakras. So what I'm trying to say here is that the Shakti does not have to rise chakra by chakra like an elevator. The awakening of the chakras can occur in sequence. It can occur out of order, and it can also occur through the activation of the centers in the crown chakra. Another thing that's interesting to notice is that sometimes when you have an activation of a chakra or in meditation, you'll see the energies in the chakras, and you might see them according to a tradition that you practice in, or you might see them in different ways. Sometimes people see the chakras as flowers, sometimes as fruits, sometimes as lights. Sometimes they have a sense of animal energies, which there are animal energies, sacred animal energies related to many of the chakras. Sometimes we have a sense of beings present in the chakras. Each chakra has a center, which is called a bindu or point, which contains the essence of the energy of that particular chakra. And from this center emanate waves of subtle thought patterns that are called vrittis in Sanskrit. If you're familiar with Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you know this word vritti. And the energies of these subtle constellations of tendencies in each chakra actually act through all three bodies. So you'll have physical experiences of them, subtle experiences that, you know, that is, they'll come up as emotions or as thoughts. And you'll also experience them on that very subtle level that we call the unconscious, in which they affect us without our being consciously aware of them. And when Kundalini is rising, is moving in the chakras, it begins to release, and in some of the chakras, transform the vrittis, the tendencies associated with them. And a lot of the turmoil that we sometimes experience during the purificatory part of the Kundalini journey is associated with the readjustment of each chakra. Most of you who practice in the yoga world will have worked with different chakras, maybe through bijas or through sound. And in traditional cosmology, each of the chakras is said to contain several types of subtle, several, let's say, faces, emanations of the subtle forces that are dominant in each chakra. And they all have a male deity who it is really possible to envision in meditation. And people who are doing traditional tantric Kundalini practice will often visualize these deities. So the male deity signifies one of the divine forces within the cosmos, and there is a goddess in each chakra who represents the particular type of shakti, of cosmic energy that manifests through that chakra. There's an animal who represents the elemental forces of the chakra. And the whole chakra is a yantra or a mandala, which contains many different geometric forms. It contains a bija mantra, a sacred sound syllable, which is related to the element in the chakra. And that Sanskrit letter can actually appear in light when you have a spontaneous vision of the chakra. And in some traditional meditations, you're asked to visualize, especially in Tibetan practice, you're asked to visualize that letter. Or, you know, as we've done in some cases, you chant or contemplate the bij mantra of the chakra itself. So, there is this, and the meditation on each chakra is said to activate, and this is, again, it's one of the secrets of chakra meditation. If you do the traditional meditation on the chakras, which can be done in several ways, it activates the shakti of the goddess who lives there. And this will open you to a unique divine potential that is the awakened force inside the chakra. So, there is a tantric protocol for meditation on these shaktis, and we'll work with them a little bit tonight. One of the great things about going through the qualities of the chakras is that it actually helps us locate and understand some of the experiences that we have that are not necessarily psychological in nature. So, we're going to begin, as we began tonight, by tuning into the Muladhara chakra. So I'd like you to, as you sit, to feel the presence of the Sushumna Nadi, this subtle channel which sometimes is represented as a thread of light, a thread of energy that runs from just inside the perineum, but in the subtle body, up, paralleling the spinal column, up the inside of the spinal column, through the torso, up through the whole body, through the throat, the center of the head, to the crown. And just let yourself begin to be aware of the presence of the Sushumna Nadi. If you checked your email today, you'll notice that I sent you a very beautiful kind of psychedelic painting of the chakras along the Sushumna. And you can now feel yourself connected to the Muladhara, which some of you have become quite familiar with. The Muladhara with its four petals representing the four kinds of bliss. Its yellow square, the circle within the square, the red circle within the square with a downward pointing triangle, Kundalini inside it. The Muladhara or root support chakra is associated with physical manifestation, the fully incarnated earth plane. And again, let the breath flow and let yourself be present with the chakra as I talk about it. The deity of the Muladhara chakra is Brahma, who is the deity, the cosmic force associated with the manifestation of the physical and subtle universes. And many people, especially Eastern influenced Western practitioners, sometimes describe the Muladhara as holding the primordial evolutionary history of the human being. So in other words, from a certain point of view, the whole evolutionary history of our incarnation and everything that has gone towards creating the modern human creature is contained within the Muladhara. It's the foundation of our incarnation. And, of course, having a balanced Muladhara chakra is associated with the feeling of security, with the strength and groundedness of being in your place in the world, with the earth element, and with the earthy qualities of firmness, balance, and support. The colors of the chakra are orange and red, and the earth element of the chakra is indicated by the yellow square, yellow being the color of earth in the tantric traditions. The triangle in the center points downwards, which indicates Shakti having completely descended into manifestation. The three corners of the triangle represent the primal powers of will, knowledge, and action. And if you're tuned into this triangle, you can actually imagine it there at the base of the spine in the perineum. The corners vibrate with the cosmic will, which is the urge to live, the life force itself, the power of knowledge, which manifests as the innate intelligence of atoms and molecules in the body and brain, and the power of action, which sustains the action of the organs of the body, which brings in the breath. And Kundalini, as we've said so often, is coiled around, in the triangle, around the lingam, the self-born or Swayambhu lingam, which represents the natural creative thrust of evolutionary energy. And the Swayambhu lingam, which again many people see in meditation and which you may have a sense of as I speak, is actually the subtle core from which the human body originates. That is, in the inseminated embryo, the yolk sac of the ovum develops into the gut tube, which arises from the base of the torso before there is a body. And we could say that this is the physical analog of the Swayambhu lingam. The goddess of this chakra is called Dakini, and she's said to be the energy of creation. And the Sushumna Nadi rises from the Swayambhu lingam. It's said that the Swayambhu lingam closes the opening into the Sushumna Nadi, and that as Kundalini rises, she rises from the tip of the Swayambhu lingam and breaks through into the Sahasrara. So just allow yourself once again with the breath to focus your awareness in the Muladhara chakra, feeling the earthiness of the yellow square, the four red petals with their four varieties of bliss, inside the chakra is the Bij letter Lam, which is the Bij mantra of earth. So I have the thought as the breath flows in, and you tune yourself to the chakra in the Muladhara. Have the thought, Lam. Actually, you can pronounce it Long. That M sound is a nasal, Lam. Inhaling with Lam. As if you were allowing the seed syllable to vibrate in this chakra. Lung, lung, lung. Your awareness now rises with the next inhalation. Through the Sushumna Nadi, or if you're not so generally aware of this, of the Sushumna Nadi as a specific thread, just let your attention rise to the center of the lumbar region of the back. And with your attention, with the breath, feel your way around. It's more or less between the third and fourth lumbar is the Svadhisthana chakra, the second chakra. Svadhisthana means own place. And the second chakra, the Svadhisthana chakra, is associated with the water element. It's symbolized by the half moon, just as earth is symbolized by the square. And one way to visualize this chakra is to just imagine the half moon, luminous white, inside the chakra. The god, the deity of the Svadhisthana is Vishnu, the sustaining, nourishing energy of the universe, which is a clue to the nourishing quality of Svadhisthana chakra. And it's one reason why this chakra is associated with generativity and creativity, as well as, of course, with sexuality and with the unconscious. In mythology, Vishnu sleeps in the great cosmic ocean, and the world is said to be his dream. So the water element in the Svadhisthana is the element of the nurturing ocean that's the source of life. It's literally the water of the womb, the water of creativity. It's in this way, the Svadhisthana is a center for deep physical healing. At one time, when I was feeling quite sick, I used to spend time sitting by the ocean near my house in Carmel, California, and I would visualize the ocean swells inside my Svadhisthana chakra, and it was an immensely soothing and deeply nourishing meditation just to feel the deep ultramarine of ocean moving in swells inside the pelvis, literally flowing as ocean nurtures life. The energy, the generative energy of the second chakra nurtures this part of your body and can very profoundly heal imbalances in your unconscious as well as in your bladder, in your sexual organs, in your generative organs, in your kidneys. All these parts of your body are associated with the fluids, and the Shakti of the Svadhisthana chakra is named Rakini. She's dark blue, the color of the ocean. She has three eyes, and she carries a trident, which is the symbol of the three worlds, waking, dream, and deep sleep, and of the three qualities of nature out of which everything arises, the quality of sattva or purity, quality of passion or rajas, and the quality of dullness or tamas. And interestingly enough, the second chakra controls the tongue and the sense of taste. So it's associated with your capacity to balance your dietary habits. From an esoteric point of view, we could say that eating disorders would be related to the second chakra. So the fluids in the body are balanced as we meditate on water in the second chakra. It will really begin to balance the fluids in our body. The second chakra has a bad reputation in some circles, and when it's not awakened, its six petals are said to carry the vrittis, the tendencies of self-neglect, insensitivity, credulity, suspicion, destructiveness, and cruelty. And at the same time, meditating on Svadhisthana and an awakening of Svadhisthana can dissolve egotism, petty desires, and you actually develop equanimity of mind by meditating in Svadhisthana. So these qualities, these tendencies of the chakra actually get transmuted through as Kundalini awakens in the chakra. But sometimes when the Kundalini is working there, these are when you experience the purification of these qualities and the tendencies that arise, the suspiciousness, the your mean streak, which sometimes comes up when Shakti is working there, self-neglect. These are all qualities that can arise as we experience the purification of this chakra. So right now, we're going to focus on the Svadhisthana, finding yourself present in this center, in the lumbar region, the lower lumbar region of the spine, just in front of the spinal column, inside the Sushumna Nadi. Feel the presence of a deep, oceanic, liquid energy in this center. It's dark blue in color. In the very center is a half moon, a luminous white half moon. The six blue petals of the chakra undulate like ocean waves. And as you focus on the chakra, with each inhalation and exhalation, bring in the Bija mantra, Wam, Wam, Wam. V-A-M, but the is pronounced wa, and it's really more of a wang, wang. See if you can feel the vibration, wang, inside the center. And as you do, imagine that your entire pelvic region is filled with the water of a deep blue ocean, swelling tides. Very soft, centered, healing feeling, the feeling of a calm ocean with that slight ripple of movement within it. You inhale and exhale, allowing the Bija syllable wang to vibrate inside the oceanic energy of the Svadhisthana chakra. Now your energy, the Kundalini, the sense of presence begins to rise up just a little way up the Sushumna Nadi, and you find yourself centered behind the navel. In that place, opposite the navel, in the Sushumna Nadi, running up against the front of the spinal column. And you're becoming aware now of the Manipura chakra. Manipura means city of jewels. The Manipura has 10 petals. Its color is red, very deep red. And the deity of the Manipura is Rudra, who is a form of Shiva whose name means the howler. Rudra is a warrior deity. His energy destroys negative elements, and it's said that he can either generate fear or destroy fear. For most of us, fear and also the sense of the power of fearlessness are both felt very much in the solar plexus in the body, and they are very much associated, as many of you know, with the Manipura chakra, the third chakra. The goddess of this chakra is called Lakini. She's considered a universal benefactress, and she's associated with the sacrificial fire, the sacred fire that so many ancient peoples made offerings to in order to generate connection with the heavenly realms. The animal of this chakra is the ram, a strong, impulsive animal. And the Manipura is the seat of the element of fire, the element of Agni. So it's the place where you meditate when you want to improve your digestion. The fire element in the body includes both the electrical impulses that move throughout the body and also the heat generated by stomach acids. The Manipura governs the abdominal organs, the large intestine, the whole process of digestion, the liver. And when this chakra is being purified, it's not at all unusual to experience stomach upset. And it's also true that when we meditate on the Manipura, it will cure abdominal diseases. So one of the ways in which we practice with the Manipura chakra, with the third chakra, is really to eat with the sense that we're offering the food to the fire of Agni in the Manipura, that we offer everything we eat with the sense that it's going to be consumed by and nourish this lustrous energy in the Manipura chakra. Some of the gifts associated with awakened Manipura are that through this awakened chakra, we can realize eternal time and remember past lives. It's a chakra that, when it's awakened, it gives us incredible strength, power, fearlessness. When it's unawakened, its 10 petals are associated with tendencies like shame, treachery, jealousy, unquenchable desire, sleepiness, despondence, attachment to the external world, delusion, aversion, and of course fear. And to awaken the chakra and to meditate in the chakra, it helps you remove these qualities, and it gives many, many esoteric siddhis, like being able to enter the bodies of others, to see into the essential nature of things. It's also very telling that the Manipura chakra is the area of the Hara, which is the center where Zen meditators focus, and it's also the center where martial artists, very skilled martial artists of Tai Chi and Taekwondo and Aikido, their strength, their power, actually comes from meditating in the Manipura chakra. So the capacity that arises in us when we're focused there, when we awaken that chakra through the breath and through meditation, is that power begins to flow through us in a way that, that in Chinese is called wu wei. It's the power, the action of non-action, the natural action of this center. And it's in my understanding, in my tradition, this chakra is associated with beingness, with the quality of mind-free beingness. So it's a very sacred center, and its seed mantra is the seed of fire, Ram. Ram, it's spelled R in Sanskrit, spelled R-A-Ma, Ram. And you can, as you sit, see if you can feel the center in the back of the body, centered in the area just behind the navel, but flowing through the whole abdominal region with a quality of very soft fire. It's warm. It glows with a red and orange light. And you're offering, with the inhalation, you're offering the mantra Ram, Ram, Rang, Rang. With the inhalation and exhalation into the center of fire, of heat, within the torso, in the region of the navel. And as the breath flows in, your attention rises now into the heart, into the back of the heart, behind the sternum, to the Anahata Chakra. The Anahata Chakra has 12 petals. Its color is gray, and it's said that it's the color of the smoke that arises from the fire in the Manipura. It's associated with the air element and also with the subtle unstruck sound called nada, the sound that arises spontaneously as we enter deeply into the heart chakra. It's the midpoint of the chakra system. It's the place where the energies of the human and divine converge. And the very center of the 16-petaled heart chakra has a crossed triangle, which creates a six-pointed star. One upward-pointing triangle and one downward-pointing triangle come together, symbolizing the coming together of masculine and feminine, of earth and heaven. So the heart is the place where we begin to enter into wholeness, and it's where we experience our first tastes of spiritual love. And because the heart chakra is ruled by the element of air, the experience of the heart opening is very often an experience of expanding air, a sense of touch. It's associated with touch. Air touches us from inside and from outside. And inside the golden six-pointed star is the deity Isha, who is also a form of Shiva. Isha is the deity of high spiritual knowledge and the first stages of samadhi. He sits on a black gazelle, which symbolizes air. And he's with his Shakti, Kakini. Kakini is the color of lightning, and she's radiant with light and joy. And when we concentrate on Kakini in the heart, she removes all the obstacles to the rising of Kundalini. And of course, inside the Anahata Chakra is inside. In the very center of the triangle is the thumb-sized flame of the self in the heart, which is actually said to be the light of the individual self inside the subtle body. And it's said in one of the tantras that the soul in the heart, the self in the heart, and in the Sanskrit texts they say that the seat of the mind is actually in the heart. It moves through the petals, the 12 petals of the heart lotus. And on these petals, there are mixed qualities, which is one reason why when the heart is awakened, so much stuff comes up. And some of the qualities of the heart are expectation, anxiety, and there's the positive quality of endeavor, the capacity for focused action. Attachment is there. You know how when your heart center awakens, you sometimes remember your high school sweetheart and wonder why you ever let her go or why you ever broke up with him. Hypocrisy is there, a sense of weakness, the sense of ego, the quality of discretion, indecision, regret. All these qualities get purified through the awakening of the heart chakra. And meditation here makes us ready for God realization. And I know many of you have that experience in heart meditation. It gives you the capacity to fulfill your desires, including desires you never believed were possible to fulfill. And it accesses an ever-deepening experience of bliss once this purification has been completed. This is definitely my experience with this chakra, which has been the main seat of my meditation for many years. And one reason why I like to teach meditation in the heart is because qualities like compassion, acceptance, unconditional love are the qualities that are awakened in the heart chakra as it awakens. It actually gives you a very deep and centered contact with the energy that's sometimes called soul love, the love that in which you just feel deep affection for others and for the world and also for yourself. You're able to experience love without neediness. And as the heart center is purified, as we purify the feelings of, you know, of unworthiness and emotionality, then we come to a place where we actually recognize our beauty, the beauty of ourselves, and we're able to be actually truly compassionate towards ourselves, which is a huge sign of the opening and awakening of the heart chakra. So let your awareness flow inside the heart. Perhaps you can have the sense of the six-pointed star inside the center of your chest, the flame, the thumb-sized white flame. And as the breath flows in and flows out, it flows with the thought, yang, the Bij mantra of the heart, yang, yang. Yang. Just allowing the breath to allow your attention to flow more and more deeply into the heart. Each breath allowing the flame to grow, to expand, to open you. And your awareness now rises into the throat, at the base of the throat, to the Vishuddha chakra, pearly gray in color with 16 petals. And the Vishuddha is the seat of the ether element. So as you meditate there, you often have a sense of space expanding. And the fifth chakra, the Vishuddha chakra. Vishuddha means very pure. It's associated with inspired expression. The petals of the chakra contain the seven notes of the musical scale. They contain nectar and poison, the poison being the poison that Shiva swallowed in order to protect the world. And of course, the quality of speech is that it can produce nectar or it can produce poison. And the capacity for 7 powers of expression. And these are powers that go with priestly and teacherly expression. The power to exorcise spirits, the power to preside over fire rituals and other public rituals. These are 2 powers. The power to speak your intentions and have them come true. This is the power of manifestation through speech. The power to give blessings, and the power to create exalted states in the people who hear you. So in other words, the Vishuddha chakra opening is really the beginning of the sadhana of priests and healers. Because when it opens, it puts you in touch with intuition, higher creativity, and especially with grace, with the source of grace. You actually, and this is very, very significant and very beautiful, as the Vishuddha chakra opens, and I know for me it took many years before this chakra really began to manifest this way, you start to experience the fact that blessings can actually come from within you, that you're connected to the source of grace, and that you can speak words of grace and actually receive grace. You know how hard it is sometimes to believe that you actually can receive grace or that things are really going to work out. This begins to change as Kundalini awakens the Vishuddha chakra. And many people say to me, and I had this experience for many years, that they feel like it's not okay to pray for themselves or to pray for healing or to pray for worldly things, that it's only okay to pray for others. And in fact, at a certain point, as the Vishuddha chakra awakens, you begin to realize that because you are yourself the source of blessing, you are actually deserving of blessings. And that even as you offer blessings to others and as you pray for others and as you pray for your practice to be of benefit to others, you also can become aware of gifts and understandings and benefits that need to manifest in your world in order to complete your journey. And sometimes these blessings are spiritual and sometimes they're material. But when the Vishuddha chakra is open, it becomes very clear to you. As the poet Tukaram Maharaj said, that, you know, you can ask for what you need because you're not asking in a greedy way. You're asking with a sense that certain blessings are deserved in order for you to carry on your life and your work in the world, just as you offer them to others. The deity of the 6th chakra is Ardha Narishwara, the androgen, half of whose body is masculine and half feminine. He sits on a white elephant, and his Shakti is yellow. Her name is Shakini Shakti. She's the ruler of the mysteries of the subtle world, the world of dreams, visions, and that power that lets subtle gifts come into the physical world through speech. Its instrument is the ears and sound. And when you focus here, it's said that worldly sounds lose their ability to distract you. The seed syllable of the Vishuddha chakra is shang, shang. So let yourself focus on this center at the base of the throat, feeling the subtle, luminous white energy of the element of space, the Vishuddha chakra, filling your throat, expanding your body through the throat. As you inhale with the sound shang, shang, and exhale, allowing the sound shang to resonate through the chakra and through your entire region of your neck, purifying your speech, opening your throat. And again, sense the presence of the Sushumna Nadi now, flowing from the base of the spine, from the Muladhara up through the Svadhisthana, through the Manipura, the Anahata, up to the Vishuddha Chakra. And feel now the presence of the Sushumna Nadi as your attention flows up to the middle of the head, opposite the base of the nose, between the eyebrows, but in the very center of the head, to the Ajna Chakra. Ajna means command. And it's said that this chakra is where you receive the command to enter fully into the world of enlightened consciousness. The Ajna Chakra is the source of two flows of cranial nerves, one through the eyes and the other through the midbrain. And it's the crossing point of the three main nadis, the inner channels, Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. And of course, the Ajna Chakra is also the seat of what in so many traditions is called the third eye or the wisdom eye. And you see this wisdom eye as a vertical eye in the center of the forehead of pictures of deities in the Indian and Tibetan tradition. And through many, many cultures, many ancient cultures, the center has been associated with the inner light, with subtle knowledge, with spiritual intuition, and the ability to see subtle realms. So it's when the Ajna Chakra opens, this is where we have visions of the divine, and we also get the intimation of our own divinity, the experiences of unity awareness, the experience of merging into nature or into another person, the experience of just intuiting unity, of realizing that you never die, that you have an eternal soul. These are all signs of the activation of the Ajna Chakra. And it's also, you know, the experience of shunya, of the great voidness of consciousness, when everything dissolves into your consciousness and you experience the universe as consciousness itself. These are moments when the Ajna Chakra opens. The goddess of Ajna is Hakini. She has six faces and six arms, which represent the five elements and the state beyond them. And the seed syllable of the Ajna Chakra is Om. The chakra has two petals, which surround, they're white, and they surround a circle that's luminous like the moon, and within it is the letter Om and a white flame, which is another element of the inner flame. So as you allow the breath to flow in and flow out of the center of the head, right in the very center of the head, allow the syllable Om, Om to resound in the center of the head. And you may find it actually quite comfortable to imagine this two-petaled lotus. And inside the center of the circle, between the two petals, you can see the Sanskrit letter Om, which so many of us are familiar with. It's silvery, lightning-like light. And it vibrates around a tiny white flame. Om, flowing in with the breath. As your awareness centers in the very middle of the head, feel that the breath is radiating from the center of the flame. And as it does, the boundaries of your body are free to slowly expand, so that perhaps for a moment you can allow yourself to recognize that what you are is light. Even just holding this recognition the breath flows in and out of the center of the head with the flame. You open to the spaciousness of the great mind, the one mind of which your mind is a part. And you can allow your awareness to rise now for just a moment up through the crown of the head to the Sahasrara chakra, which is located just above the crown. And for many of us, it's possible to imagine it, or even perhaps visualize it, as a chrysanthemum of light. It's about 8 fingers above the crown of the head. The Sahasrara chakra is the abode of supreme light, of the supreme absolute, where Kundalini Shakti joins her consort Shiva, if you put this in terms of story. It's the place where energy and spirit unite. And when this chakra is awakened and opens, it opens up the experience of great bliss, which is the culminating meditation experience of the tantras, which is sometimes described as the bliss of a million orgasms. And in deep meditation, this chakra opens and you become one with all that is. You become one with the divine. You experience the bliss of cosmic merging, which is in fact the promise of the Kundalini traditions, that through your practice, you'll be able to enter again and again into this realm of oneness and blissfulness, your mind melting like a hailstone into the ocean of supreme bliss, as Shankaracharya, the great master of Vedanta, writes. And in the Tibetan tradition, and also in the Hindu tantric tradition, it's said that as your Kundalini rises and opens this center, as the energy of Kundalini merges with the ultimate energy of absolute Shiva in the crown, the bliss of their union sheds a nectar that flows down through your brain, rejuvenates your brain, flows down through your body, and brings shakti, bliss, profound rejuvenation to every cell of your body. And as this rolling bliss, this nectar flows through the body, the imbalances and karmic traces remaining in your chakras are dissolved. And in the process of allowing Kundalini to arise to the Sahasrara, and then letting the nectar of that meditation flow down through your body is gradually transformed. And for many of you who've been doing this practice, there is actually an experience of the body lightening. Literally lightening, diseases dissolving, disappearing. Kundalini transforming you not only subtly, but even physically. And as your awareness now touches into this center in the crown of the head, I want you to feel that with the exhalation, the energy from that center is now flowing down through your head, inhaling and exhaling. You gently invite the Shakti to flow through the head and neck, back down, through the shoulders, through the heart, down through the torso, filling your whole body. The light flows through your arms. It's filling the inner organs. And it flows through, down through the solar plexus, through all the abdominal organs and down into the pelvic region, filling your lower back, your spinal column, your hip bones, all the intestinal organs, the organs of generativity and excretion, your sexual organs, your legs, your thighs and knees and calves and down into your feet. And for this moment, see if you can sense the rejuvenating light and presence of Kundalini Shakti flowing through your entire body, recognizing that within you, around you, above you, below you, in the connections of these wires that allow our communication, in the subtle connections between all the beings in this call and all the beings in the world, there is this flow of soft light, the light of blessing, the light of love, the light of awakened Kundalini, who is blessing each of us in our own unique way, with the unfoldment of our highest love and power. And as we close tonight, I'd like to ask you to let yourself sit inside this sense of your body filled with Shakti, with Kundalini. Sit for as long as feels comfortable. You'll be receiving a homework assignment, and with it, my love and blessing. Please know that the listserv and the class continues for another week, so we have another week of practice together, and of course, I'll be answering questions, and you'll be sharing your experiences. So have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week, and may the goddess Shakti Kundalini bless you and awaken you in every part of your being. Namaste.